Ready to go.
All right. Awesome. So let's kind of jump into it.
Hold on one second. Yeah. Yes. I fucking told you. I'm doing this. Yes. I'm recording, honey.
Sorry, honey. It's going to get lunch.
Okay.
No.
Not necessary at all.
No, this happens to me all the time.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is
Ancient Aliens? More like Ancient Falians.
I like that. That's good. This is More Like Ancient Falians, a podcast about the History Channel show Ancient Aliens. I'm Toby Ball, the creator and host of the UFO podcast Strange Arrivals.
And I'm Brandon R. Reynolds, a journalist who isn't sure he hasn't been abducted.
And today, our guest is the one and only Daisy Egan, host of the podcast Strange and Unexplained with Daisy Egan. Daisy, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, this will be fun. All right. So today we are looking at the episode Strange Abductions, which is season 5, episode 9. And I have to say, this was not really what I was expecting when I came into this episode. Why are we covering this episode? You know, the modern alien abduction phenomenon really begins around 1961 with the Betty and Barney Hill abduction story. This is something I covered pretty extensively in Strange Arrivals, and how that story sort of provided this model that future abduction stories kind of built on and built on and built on. And then you eventually came to, you know, the 1980s and 1990s. Leaking into the 2000s when you had people like John Mack and Bud Hopkins thinking that there were hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people being abducted. So the thesis, I have no idea whatsoever what the thesis. Did any of you get
of this particular episode?
Did you see any through lines or thesis or any sense of commonalities?
I mean, aliens allegedly have been abducting us since the dawn of humanity.
Yeah.
This one, I think, had a lot more twists and turns than I'm used to. Usually there's more of a straight line. And this one really was like, wait, they're going from Muhammad's experiences in a cave to Fort Lauderdale, Bermuda yeah. Triangle, and then Atlantis. I mean, it was really like a game of the dozens where they were just sort of having to up the stakes every time. What's the craziest pivot we can do here? We got to keep them really listening.
And then like a lot of it just didn't even seem like it was abductions, unless the idea was like entire civilizations were spontaneously abducted. But we'll get to that. All right. So we start off with 1975 with the case of Travis Walton, which is one of the most famous abduction cases. Essentially, Travis Walton is with five of his friends. They're all forest workers. According to Ancient Aliens, they see a disc hovering in the sky. Five of the foresters run away. Travis Walton gets zapped by a beam of light. And when his friends like come back to look for him, he's gone. And he wakes up in a room surrounded by strange beings. They don't talk about this in the episode, but apparently their skin was like mushrooms, had the consistency of a mushroom. They're humanoid, but they're not human. 5 days later, he reappears in a nearby town. And according to Ancient Aliens researchers, this is one of the most credible abduction stories on record. Are you familiar with the Travis Walton story?
Just vaguely. I actually haven't covered this case yet, so I'm not tremendously like detailed familiar with it, but I'm familiar with the basic overview. It's funny to hear people say it's one of the most credible alien abduction stories. Like, do you have any material proof of it, or just that this guy was gone for 5 days and then reappeared?
Yeah, Toby, explain what they're up to here.
Yeah. Well, to answer your question, Daisy, no. So there's a guy who had flown out from, I think, Los Angeles to Arizona to try and cover this for the National Enquirer. As soon as this happened, all these different news organizations sort of descended on this town in Arizona. Everybody's trying to get the scoop. 60 Minutes got there. But this guy from the National Enquirer ended up writing sort of an essay about his experience and what he kind of found. He said that what happened in the polygraph was that the forest workers said they saw a light. They didn't say they saw a disc in the sky. They didn't say they saw him beamed up into some spaceship in a beam of light. Like that's all untrue. But they did say they saw a light. His family was actually UFO enthusiasts.
What an interesting coincidence.
Especially their father. And that from a young age, apparently Travis Walton had wanted to be on a spaceship and go traveling through space. When the mother and brother were informed of his disappearance, their sort of instant assumption was that he'd been abducted by a UFO and that he'd be returned. There's no point in looking for him because he'd come back eventually. And so, you know, these UFO, quote unquote, investigators came in. Regression hypnosis was performed on him, although it was done in private. And the strong sense is that they sort of helped him get, quote unquote, memories about what had happened. And that basically this guy from the National Enquirer said it was just sort of depressing and that it was just, you know, it didn't happen. And a whole bunch of people came in trying to make money off it, including Travis's brother, older brother, who they described as being very scary. And to this day, Travis Walton is still out there doing the UFO circuit.
It's weird to think of the sort of great American novel of it all, where this guy did this thing to basically make his father proud of him. And like after the fact, you know, it's sort of, what's his dad like? I mean, you became world famous for getting kidnapped by a UFO. Like, I think this is so great. Interestingly, this episode deals with a lot of psychologists or a handful of psychologists and the kind of conversion of mythology into psychology. So it's an interesting story to start out on because it does seem so much like it's all about what's really going on beneath the hood of the head, I guess, you know, so to speak. Did y'all see the movie Fire in the Sky, 1993? Remember this movie?
I sure didn't.
I have not.
Did you?
It's one of D.B. Sweeney's greatest. Yeah, I saw it in the theater. And this was at a time when all the UFO stuff really scared the hell out of me. So it was, I viewed it as a horror movie rather than, I think it was, you know, it was depicted as kind of a thriller. It was around the same time that Communion came out with Christopher Walken, which is worth watching because he's just acting the fool. I mean, he's really doing some great, strange acting. Anyway,
I worked with him. He is a strange, strange man.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. He's very weird. I think he's just been so disconnected from reality for so long that he's just like become his persona, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, he may in fact be an alien for all we know.
He may be. Yeah. He came into rehearsal wearing these very strange black shoes and somebody asked him about it and he says, they're my rocket ship shoes. So
that's wonderful.
There you go.
Wait, what was the thing you were doing?
We were in a musical called James Joyce's The Dead on Broadway. And there's a lot of stories I can tell you about him. But the biggest one was that he had to dance in the show, just a simple waltz, and it was not very good. And then he took a week off to do Saturday Night Live and did like a full tap number. And we were all watching it like, what? Where is that?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, he was holding it for the big show.
All right. So this is just the beginning, like 4 minutes of the episode. They go into Project Blue Book, which people who are listening to this are probably familiar with. They make this strange claim that Hynek's, you know, close encounter system is, quote unquote, evidence of UFOs, which it is most certainly not. They kind of talk about the classification system. Hynek was another guy I spent some time with on Strange Arrivals. I mean, he's an interesting character in the UFO scene because he went from being a skeptic to being a believer to and sort of ending up the way like a guy like John Mack ended up, which I think is when like smart people who are looking at the UFO thing and believe that the UFO people are actually seeing things or having these experiences, and then they're trying to reconcile with the fact that there's absolutely no physical evidence. And then they get into this whole thing about, you know, interdimensional beings or, you know, some kind of Jungian projection.
Telepathic communication.
Yeah, all this stuff. So he kind of went down that rabbit hole at the end and, you know, said, you know, maybe parapsychology is the way we're going to figure it all out, which is probably not what you want from your lead scientist on a scientific exploration of the unknown. But that's where we were.
And even Blue Book, right, which kind of has become a shorthand for government investigation into UFOs, you read it, it's like most of this is just absolutely nothing. You know, like there's more planes and stuff in the sky now, and people are seeing that. So that's what it is.
Right. The problem is that, you know, we have been and are increasingly in a time where people don't believe what the government says. So they're like, well, of course they'll tell us it's swamp gas. That's what they want us to think.
It's always swamp gas.
Always swamp gas.
So we can move on from Project Blue Book. It's, they talked to this guy, Ken Storch, who talked about close encounters of the fourth kind, which is abductions, and the fifth kind, which is communication.
Never heard of the fifth kind.
I think there's actually a sixth kind, which is when you kind of summon them yourself. And there's, I can't remember the guy's name, but he kind of came up with this idea and actually has like this small following of people who think they can sort of telepathically summon aliens.
Great. It's nice that they're sort of like on hold waiting for us.
Yeah. I'd be on hold if aliens were trying to contact me to be in touch with them.
Oh man. I would be like, please get me off of here as soon as possible.
So then we have this quick transition with a folklorist talking about, you know, abduction stories. It wasn't clear to me that she realized how her little interview was going to be used in this. Yeah. Like it could have been just, I mean, it seemed like a pretty typical kind of common thing for a folklorist to say, whether that was going to be used as evidence that aliens were kidnapping people was less clear to me.
Many of these abduction stories are really scary. The abductee is not fully in control of his or her own body. The abductee has all kinds of very painful things done to them that he or she cannot control. And they're deeply changed by these experiences in ways that are often detrimental to them and very disturbing.
Yeah, she's, I looked her up, Sabina Magliocco. She is a legit professor. I mean, not to say that the ancient aliens theorists are invalid. I mean, they are humans with their own agency and so on. But she, you know, she grew up in Italy, studies folklore, religion. She's a witchcraft and new paganism expert. But she's gotten like the Guggenheim, National Endowment for the Humanities, got a Fulbright, got all these fellowships. And yeah, it's like it's just an expert on the spiritual imagination. But you know, in the bios for Professor Magliocco and another authority that's in the episode, both of them have in the little bios like has appeared as an occasional guest on a number of popular television series about modern legends and beliefs. So I think, you know, the external view is like, well, it's just one of these things where you're talking about your area of expertise. And if you know the person, you're like, yeah, that makes sense that they would weigh on it. But I think, Toby, you're right. Like no one's really considering how the whole message is going to be worked into some kind of crazy larger context. And I think that's, you know, what we've talked about in the show so far is like, you know, you can rope in legitimate people, get a little chunk of their expertise, and then you just never know in the editing bay what kind of story they're going to build out of it and how that ends up kind of reflecting on you.
Yeah, they talk about here that like increasingly common stories of abduction include sexual assault, which I found fascinating and I think probably has something to do with like sort of our cultural moment in general over the past few decades and a pushback against like freer sexuality in media and just sort of more prevalence of images. And also a lot of what they talk about, I thought reminded me of sleep paralysis. And I just was wondering if some of these people were just having episodes of sleep paralysis that included fears of being, you know, sexually assaulted and they decided it was aliens.
Yeah. I mean, we get into full on sleep paralysis towards the end of this when they start talking about Jinn and Incubus and Succubus. And
yeah,
like, I
yeah.
think those are just, especially the Incubus and Succubus, I think are just clearly sleep paralysis mm-hmm. things. But yeah, I agree.
In each account, Incubus and Succubus can paralyze their victims before having sex with them.
A female entity would come and have its way with a male victim. That would be the succubus, and Incubus would be a male version of this. Being unable to breathe, feeling like you're frozen. These are very, very similar things that happen to people in modern abduction phenomenon.
It's also, you know, it's also going to David Jacobs, who was one of the big mass abduction guys, along with Bud Hopkins and John Mack. And he really thought that, you know, hundreds of thousands of women were being sexually assaulted by aliens, either on ships or in their homes or whatever. And it's all kind of gross, to be honest.
Yeah.
Then we have a quick Linda Moulton Howe appearance where she brings up terraforming. She says people are asking her about abductions and why they're happening, but she doesn't like say whether she answers them or what her answer would be. Just people asking questions.
She drops the hybridization. Hybridization always shows up in the weirdest places and definitely comes back in this one with a vengeance.
Playing the hits. So from here, which was sort of more what I was expecting, we go back to the Bible. And I'm finding that a lot of these fairly obscure Bible things are doing a lot of ancient alien duty. We start off with the quote unquote missing pages of the Judeo-Christian Bible, which are the Dead Sea Scrolls, which I do not believe are actually the missing pages of the Bible.
Well, also one of them says the stories of aliens are probably in the missing pages of the Bible. I'm like, that is the most vague sentence you could possibly utter. Why? Because you decided that they are?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of like weird assertions.
Yeah.
Based on nothing. Just real quickly, they do the Book of Enoch, which has already been covered in a previous episode. It's the exact same stuff, making the exact same points. I didn't bother to check to see if it's the exact same clips of those people talking, but I'm not sure.
just recycled.
Yeah, just recycled, or whether they had somebody talk about the Book of Enoch like five different times so they could use mm-hmm. it in five different episodes.
I do remember Von Daniken in a previous episode talking about the Guardians of the Sky.
Yeah, the Guardians.
The Guardians.
Yes.
Yeah. Amazing.
He's
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Unintentionally hilarious in a bunch of different ways. Then we get to the Book of Exodus and talking about Moses being on Mount Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. And that when he came down, his appearance was changed. And then they say, well, you know, if that's the case, it must have been a very physical encounter. And then maybe it was an ET rather than God. And then they say, was God coming down actually a UFO? ... If we assume so, then it's a classic abduction.
Yeah.
Which is like classic ancient aliens.
If we look at it from the context of today's alien abduction stories, you know, was God coming down from the sky actually a UFO descending? Was he taken aboard, abducted onto a UFO, and held for 40 days and then returned? I think, you know, if we look at it in that context, we've got what sounds like a classic abduction.
I mean, if I assume I have $1 million, then I have $1 million.
Yeah, if we can assume that, then you're quite wealthy.
Great.
Clearly.
But assuming on this show has made somebody $1 million, probably the History Channel.
Yeah.
But we've talked about before the integration of the Bible stories into ancient aliens, and it's usually like, you know, you look at these apocryphal tales like Enoch or whatever, but it never has so far gone as far as, I mean, what it's implying is that the entirety of the Bible, the entirety of Western religion is not really God. It's not based on a foundation of a spiritual being. It's all aliens. And I think that's, I wondered what y'all thought about that, because it seems like a extremely bold thing to almost assert, particularly on the History Channel, which has a lot of other Jesus-oriented stuff. It's like, are you saying that Christianity is just an alien conspiracy? Because that's crazy. I mean, it's a hell of a thing to say.
I mean, yeah, my question is, like, you know, the assertion they're making is that it was an alien that gave him the Ten Commandments. But why does an alien care about adultery or honoring your mother? I don't know what the Ten Commandments are. I think it's about adultery and not killing people.
Yeah. False idols.
Yeah. But like, why would an alien give a shit about any of that?
I think
they're just trying to help us out, apparently.
Oh, that's nice of them. The
ancient alien theorists will say it's part of what they get at the end of the episode, which is the aliens have an agenda. And if you read it one way, it's like, well, they're trying to have us improve with all of these interventions, whether it's, you know, intervening.
They're doing a terrible job.
They're doing I know, we're not doing great. But they are hybridizing with us, Daisy. And so you have to think about
that. But
they're
also mining they're also using the planet for resources, which is confusing. Because if that were the case, why not just wipe us out and just use the planet for resources?
This is the mystery.
They're not like that.
They're nice.
They want to breed with us. You haven't watched
Who
enough.
Who wouldn't want to breed with
you
us?
You haven't watched enough Ancient Aliens, clearly.
Yeah. Apparently I haven't.
I don't know. I mean, the whole... I feel like sort of the basis of the show is scouring history to find weird shit that happened and weird stories. And the Bible is full of that stuff. I was frankly quite surprised that they're willing to go into Islam. You know, it's like mythology, the Bible, like any other religious stuff, which is going to have these strange sort of mythological stories that you can say, oh, that wasn't like, you know, he wasn't riding a flying horse. That's clearly a UFO is taking him on a, you know, interdimensional ride through the sky.
Yeah, one of the experts, one of the talking heads says that the angels took Muhammad flying around the earth. And this man says it probably took a minute and a half to circle the earth.
Yeah, that was Von Daniken.
I mean, according to what?
Yeah.
Like, where are your calculations coming from?
Vibes. Yeah,
there's a lot of weird.
Hard vibes.
So let's get to Muhammad's ET experience in just a second. Uh-huh. The other thing that kind of struck me, which I'd never heard before, was you get a priest who's written some book about, you know, aliens and the Bible or Christianity or something. And he wants to talk about the book of Jonah. Mm-hmm. And he says it doesn't seem very plausible that Jonah would survive 3 days in a fish. Therefore, was it an unidentified submarine type vehicle?
I love that.
My guy, you are talking about the Bible.
Yeah.
You are talking about a story that begins with a woman being made from the rib. Like, none of it is plausible.
Right.
Yeah.
I do support, it would be kind of awesome if somebody just rewrote the entire Bible as some kind of, like, you know, steampunk UFO.
Yeah.
Alien allegory.
You know, aliens just sort of manipulating things to create a human religion.
But then I thought you'd entirely have to revisit the story of Pinocchio. It's like that was him getting taken up by an alien. And when you turned into a donkey, that's because you're being hybridized by the aliens.
That's right.
I'm saying things differently
now.
That's
right.
You just have to have your eyes opened. Yeah. So then you have Muhammad, which Daisy already kind of mentioned. They talk about him going to a cave and getting these revelations. I don't think they have the guts to come right out and say it, but I think you're supposed to think that maybe the ETs gave him the revelations that turned into the Quran.
I mean, that's what I took away from it, was that Angel Gabriel came and gave him the Quran.
Yeah.
And, you know, either in thought or whatever, and that was actually an ET.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And took him around the world.
In a minute and a half, probably.
From the cave to Jerusalem, to heaven, where he met Jesus and the gang, Yahweh.
Yeah.
Came back.
If we take the story literally, then we get the blueprint for an alien abduction experience.
Yeah.
And the question, did they go to other dimensions? So, yeah, I wonder what Salman Rushdie thinks about all this.
The other thing, too, is that a lot of these stories are very similar to any sort of like transcendental meditation experience that somebody who is like a very experienced meditator will tell you. Like, yeah, the point of meditating is to sort of transcend this sort of plane, and it's not, you're not physically, you are having an experience of the mind that is expansive, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think what you're getting at is that you're allowing for a psychological perception of reality that is not literal. And
right.
The whole texture of this show is you have to entirely obliterate any idea that something is going to be figurative or metaphorical or whatever. And when you read that, it's like really cool and exciting to be like, well, what could this be? Which again, we come back to the idea of the sort of metaphor failure syndrome, but also the kind of 13-year-old boy of it all. Like, wouldn't it be awesome if instead of it being an angel, it's a UFO? And they went, you know, and I mean, and that also kind of explains why it's so horny, you know, like, oh yeah, obviously they want to have sex with us.
Yeah. That's, who wouldn't?
Yeah. Yes. So,
well, this is probably a good place to take a break and talk to Daisy a little bit more about what she does, what her background is. How'd you come to the strange and unexplained?
I was offered the opportunity to make this podcast on a previous network that no longer exists. And the idea was sort of unsolved mysteries, basically. And I can't do anything without, you know, being me. So it became unsolved mysteries with a lot of like snark and politics, frankly. Although I am one who believes you can't remove politics from anything.
Right.
Everything is political. We're in our fourth season, which is wild. And right now I feel a little bit like I'm flying by the seat of my pants, but it's fun. I get to cover, as I say, I cover everything from aliens to the Zodiac and everything in between. I do murders. I do unsolved murders, disappearances, Bigfoot, UFOs, cryptids, all of it.
So is this something you were interested in beforehand, or did they kind of come to you with like, would you be willing to do a podcast about this? And you had sort of thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yeah, a little of column A, a little of column B. I grew up watching Unsolved Mysteries and Tales from the Crypt and The Twilight Zone and that kind of stuff. I'm really into speculative fiction, a little bit into science fiction, but really more like, you know, like dystopic future kind of apocalyptic stories. And I think my, you know, the network at the time was sort of capitalizing on the true crime zeitgeist. So it was a confluence of the two, I think, that made it happen.
Daisy, I'm interested in when you're doing your episodes, you know, we're talking about the research or lack thereof that goes into ancient aliens. So you go into something, you're interested in, you know, an unsolved murder or Bigfoot or whatever. How are you, what's your kind of research process like for that? Are you going in assuming, you know, this thing maybe really exists, or what's your kind of base level of reality that you're operating from?
I'm pretty skeptical. And at this point, most of my episode suggestions are from listeners. So I sort of follow the lead of what my listeners want and try to approach it with as open a mind as possible. And try to ask the questions that people might ask. Like, where was that guy for 5 days? That's what I want to know. Like, where the fuck was Walton for 5 days? Or, you know, was there really a guy in that Bigfoot suit? And what's his story? I have researchers, and they basically, like, compile the research together, because that's not how my brain works. And then I kind of craft it into what I think is a compelling story. People get angry at me for covering things that they consider to be fiction, but then I have to remind them that I cover the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot, and like a lot of what I cover is lore. And you will get people who, no matter how fantastical the story is, they'll be like, no, that's a real thing that actually happened. And I'm like, okay. Like, one camp is yelling at me that it didn't happen, and the other camp is yelling at me that it did happen. So you can just take the story however you want. And then, you know, in terms of like murders and disappearances, I tend to like to look at like what happened, what led this person to commit this horrible fucking thing. What were the circumstances leading up to it? I'm not interested in gore. I'm not interested in torture porn. You know, I don't want to get into the skin peeling of it all, but I am interested in like why, you know, why. And the same thing with alien abductions, like why? If they have the ability to take us up into their spaceships, like why not just get rid of us at that point? Why put us back? Like I said in a recent episode, why not turn our skin into like nice leather couches? Like there's so many things they could do. I feel like putting us back on Earth and wiping our minds, like it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's sort of like a Coen Brothers movie. It's like these guys are committing the perfect crime, but what they don't know is they forgot to totally wipe their memory. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Do you, please be honest, have a relationship with the television program Ancient Aliens? Had you seen it before? Are you a huge fan?
I had seen it before. I feel like it was a long time ago. That guy's hair is getting more and more ridiculous. I was a little shocked at how ridiculous his hair. Like last time I saw it, it was, you know, it was big and sort of back. And now it just looks like he stuck his finger in a socket.
Big and back.
Big and back. But I did mention him in an early episode, and a friend of mine messaged to say that she and her husband were very good friends with him. And that he's a great guy. And I'm like, I'm sure he is a great guy. He's making a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Sue Kalos. He really does. Every time he comes on screen, I'm like, whatever comes out of his mouth is going to be somewhat infuriating and just sidelong to reality. But I don't know. He says it with such charm.
Yeah. The Vampire Hunter shows, the Ghost Hunter shows, like, it's a racket. They figured out how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
It's the History Channel.
It's the History Channel.
It's the History Channel.
Learning about history.
Uh-huh.
from the Bible to the Quran to the Bermuda Triangle.
You have to get to the Bermuda Triangle at some point.
Yes. And they do.
All roads lead to the ocean.
All right. To the Bermuda Triangle. Do we really need to talk about the five bombers flying and the compasses becoming inoperable and then them disappearing? It's like one of the classic stories you've been hearing forever.
You can go back and listen to my episode about the Bermuda Triangle.
Exactly. Go and listen to that episode about the Bermuda Triangle.
All of it.
Yeah.
Sort of their twist, and I don't know how much of a twist it is because I think a lot of people think about this, but what they do talk about is, you know, is Atlantis at the bottom of the Bermuda Triangle. And they admit there's no archaeological evidence, but is it possible that it sank into the Bermuda Triangle? And if so, blah, blah, blah.
Something about crystals sending up gravity rays,
it's an alien portal, and that people aren't being abducted into the sky, they're being abducted into the ocean.
Yeah.
Which is really just the sky of the ground. If you think about
that's
it.
That's true.
It sure is.
I think it's also worth noting that, you know, Daisy, to your point, like when people are saying, you know, here's what the real story is, but people aren't listening to it. The Bermuda Triangle thing has been answered by a number of people, including an Australian scientist named Carl Kruzelnicki, who, you know, basically said in the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association says the same, like, it's a numbers game. 50 ships and 20 planes disappeared in this piece of water. And if you look at any piece of water that's highly trafficked, the percentages are the same around the world. He said there's no evidence that mysterious disappearances occur with any greater frequency in the Bermuda Triangle than in any other large, well-traveled area of the ocean. That's what NOAA wrote in 2010. And what I think is funny is that the unsung hero of the Bermuda Triangle debunking game is Lloyd's of London, who is the insurer, who obviously has, you know, a horse in this fight, as it were. And they've been saying since the 70s that, no, it's numbers, it's numbers, it's numbers. You don't have to be scared. We're not going to insure a ship or whatever that's going to go into the Bermuda Triangle if we thought it was going to disappear. Don't worry, it's safe. So
no, that's all. It's all part of a conspiracy, obviously.
Yeah, an Atlantean conspiracy.
Does Lloyd's even address the Atlantis thing, or do they just try and pretend it's not true?
I'm going to say I didn't see anything on that Lloyd's put in its monocle and turned its back on me and walked away when asked.
I think that... I think that Atlantis, the Atlantis story is really, I mean, there's so much Nazi history tied to Atlantis that I think most wise people just want to sort of steer clear. You know, I'm fine. That's fine. They built a fucking temple to Triton or whatever the fuck they did while they were wiping out people. I'm cool. We'll move on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know about the Nazi thing. I actually, when I was in like second grade and I was in like some like gifted and talented program or something.
Humble brag.
And the woman who led it was this very young and she was really into Edgar Cayce, the like prophet. And so we actually, I think, did some Edgar Cayce stuff in class, which I'm not sure if any of our parents or the administration actually knew about. But he had some prophecies about Atlantis, which I learned about at like age 7 or something, which has always kind of stuck with me. I can't remember any details other than even at the time, it didn't seem like your normal school stuff.
The Nazis, believed that like the Atlanteans were a superior race because they had, you know, superior technology and et cetera, et cetera. And so they spent a lot of money sort of researching and building shrines to Atlantis.
Awesome.
Which is weird because historically, of all the civilizations out there, they are definitely the losers. Like Atlantis definitely lost. They went away 100%. They have all of this advanced stuff.
Why are you emulating them? Yeah.
It's hubris. You know, yes. It's like these guys, we want to be just like them, except for the last part, except for that last bit. Everything up till then.
All of it up until the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Enough about Atlantis. Because we're going to Mesa Verde, one of the few of these things that I've actually been to.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's not very hard to get to, quite honestly. No. It's just in Southern Colorado.
Apparently it is for UFOs.
Yes.
They can't see it.
So, right. So there is like a genuine mystery about what happened to the Anasazi people who did disappear, you know, quote unquote disappear. It's very strange that they have a problem with this idea about people living in cliffs, and that they're taking up defensive positions. And why would you do that unless stuff was coming from the sky? And it's just like, if you don't even have to think about it, but you know, it's a cliff that leads down to a canyon. So you're either settling in a canyon, so anybody who's coming on you is going to be above and you're in a bad strategic position, or you're on the like normal level of everything and you don't have any defenses. So it's really the only real safe thing that you can have. You know, you go up into your thing, you pull up the ladders, and there's not much they can do. But of course, Suklis can't imagine why you'd build into a cliff, and that it must be because there's an aerial enemy they were afraid of. Although it seems like a enemy that can fly is actually the only kind of enemy that you should be afraid of, because they can just fly down to the level of your...
Yeah, but they won't see it is the point.
Yes.
Because it's hidden. It is the only explanation. And there are no graves to explain how the people vanished, so they clearly were abducted.
Yes. It could have been a mass abduction. And then it was why? And clearly it's because the aliens want gold.
We know that the area they lived in was rich, where there is gold, which really quite often the gods are said to be interested in. It might be that they indeed ended up as other cultures which had a specific focus and emphasis on gold, which is they disappeared.
The gold thing. Right.
Again, I don't know why they don't just wipe everybody out and take whatever resources we have. But.
No, that was another great twist, though. I mean, I could not see these coming.
Yeah.
I could not see, you know, again, Bermuda Triangle, awesome. Atlantis, amazing. Anasazi, okay, getting into some Southwestern stuff. Gold, the aliens want Earth's gold, so they sucked up all the people.
Right. If their technology is that advanced that they have, that they're able to travel light years, you know, or through wormholes or portals or whatever it is, I don't think they need our gold. I think they're good.
Yeah. There's also a sort of, Lloyd's of London can back me up on this, but what I know about the universe is that gold is everywhere. It's not just on Earth. So if you have another planet, there's going to be gold there too. It's an element. Yeah. They're all over the place.
And no pesky humans.
Yeah.
That we know of. You know, it's a strong assertion.
Gold.
Gold. Yeah, I was talking to my friend a couple weekends ago about
how aliens want gold, Toby?
No, just sort of about the intrinsic value of gold and
Do they fucking want gold for?
You know, why does gold like retain this value? Like, it's not of really much use. It's just something that people kind of want.
It's nothing. It's the same with all precious gems. It's like it's just a shiny rock.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's more a matter of my lack of knowledge about economics than anything else. But why do we have a Fort Knox just full of gold bars just sitting there? And like, this is somehow maintaining our economic security.
Oh, you know also that the Lincoln Memorial is actually made of solid gold, and it's just painted white. Ooh. So that when our national debt gets over $400 trillion, we could just chip out the gold from the Lincoln Memorial.
That is a little-known fact.
Yeah. They don't want you to know that, but it's true.
Hiding in plain sight, as it were.
Do the aliens know that?
Probably. I hope not, because, you know, they'll start chipping away at it. Yeah. They want the gold.
Yeah, because Daisy, I don't know if you know this, aliens want the fucking gold from the Earth. Yeah.
It's amazing if true. All right, so we get to so-called psychic abductions. I was quite interested to see what that involved. We get, what is a djinn? So we hear about djinns, supernatural creatures that interact with humans. We get the incubus and the succubus stories, which are just like, they're just laying out sleep paralysis. Like, there's just no doubt about it. Their description of incubus and succubus experiences basically are one-to-one matches with sleep paralysis.
Also, can we talk about the fact that there was a band that named themselves after a demon that rapes women?
I know. I was thinking about
that. That is an interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. What's their they have one song, which I'm now gonna look up.
Is that the song that's like, Oh, yeah.
Whatever tomorrow brings, I'll be there.
Yeah.
I thought it was something like this.
Yeah. The great Von Daniken quote, I mean, when they parachute him and they get the hit, he was talking about, you know, what, presumably he was talking about the motivation of the incubi and or succubi, or the incubus in this case, who are these could be aliens who made a landing and, you know, they wanted to pick up some nice looking girls or nice looking guys.
Yeah, the nice looking stuff was wild.
From time to time, they made a landing and they simply captured nice looking girls, sometimes nice looking men, captured them and take them away. Sometimes these extraterrestrials had sex with some of our human. So you have an offspring. And the offspring still has part of the blood of the extraterrestrial.
I wanted to throw a brick into my television.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah, I mean, if they're coming all this way, you got to get the hot ones, you know?
Yeah.
You got to.
You think about them as sort of like the wild and crazy guys from Saturday Night Live coming down looking for foxes. Yeah. So this
episode could have been called Getting Some Strange Abductions. Thank you.
All right. We then go to shamanism and shamans, which I think is sort of what Daisy was talking about earlier about transcendental meditation, you know, sort of using meditation techniques or whatever. And of course, this brings up the apparently rhetorical question, are they being abducted by ETs? Because of course they are.
Winston Churchill, Joan of Arc, Gandhi, Tesla, all the hits.
Alexander the Great.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, bunch of them.
Joan of Arc is an interesting historical figure because she's an avowed mystic. You know, she got all these things. But she's also one that had epilepsy, like Dostoevsky and some others. Mm-hmm. And so they think maybe the visions were connected to the epileptic aura. But now, apparently, we find out, nope, alien telepathy.
No, it was aliens. Harriet Tubman, too, right?
Harriet Tubman, yeah.
Did she have epilepsy or was she psychically abducted?
Oh, I probably psychically abducted.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. The Underground Railroad was an alien plot.
That's
probably an underground vehicle.
An alien scheme. Well, that fits right in with the Civil War, aliens in the Civil War episode that we just talked about.
Oh, fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff there.
Or Jonah and the alien submarine, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's underground.
From this point on, things start to devolve as they often do in these to just a whole hell of a lot of questions and assertions. Is there a secret plan to breed with humans to populate Earth with hybrids? Seems likely. There's evidence of genetic manipulation in ancient documentation. This to me seems completely bizarre, but I assume it's, again, it's like these like weird mythological creatures that they think must be based on real things.
Yeah. And it's also probably like, you know, like a brown person was born with blue eyes or something. And people were like, well, clearly that's some divine thing. Yeah. And then we decided that's an alien thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. Yeah. I mean, maybe they have this, but you know, you get these tales from like explorers in like the 12, 13, 1400s who go to these lands and then come back with these like crazy drawings of like lions with men's heads and stuff. And maybe there is an episode where they take it completely seriously. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Evidence of genetic manipulation might be overstating the case slightly.
Well, one guy tells us that evolution is the result of an outside force. And he says, there lies the evidence, if you will. There it is.
But the question is, will you? Will you?
Will you? I will not.
Yes.
But if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we end up kind of with this idea that abductions are a preparation for something to happen in our future.
Might the numerous accounts of alien abductions, not only recently, but throughout the ancient past, really provide evidence of an extraterrestrial agenda? A plan not only to communicate with us, but for us to communicate through them. If so, what is the message?
Travis Walton actually makes a late appearance to say that he doesn't think they're actually abductions. He thinks they're actually something that's kind of helpful, although that did not seem to be his actual experience.
Yeah.
And then what is the message?
It helped him get closer to his dad.
That's true.
That's so nice.
Finally got his father's approval. Might these abductions be a reunion with our remote past?
You know, it could be that we are a simulation. I did an episode about it, and there are some very smart people, Elon Musk notwithstanding, who believe that, like, the odds are pretty good. So, like, maybe we're already in the future, and we're just a past projection. We're basically like a Sims game. We don't know.
That's true.
We could be.
I'm actually glad that I don't know.
Yeah.
To be honest.
But Daisy, if we were a Sim, wouldn't we have the little triangles floating over our heads?
I mean, we would. And also it would be awfully pixelated when we were in bed together. But
is that what that is?
Maybe it is from above.
Yep. That's how the succubus see it.
So do we have any final thoughts on this strange abduction episode?
I wanted to say that I think this is an episode that's interesting because it seems like there was a higher than average percentage of legit researchers, theorists, etc., who had, you know, bona fides and came from somewhere. And one of those that I thought was sort of weirdly ironic was Jonathan Young, who had this very resonant voice. And he was the one who is the manager of the archives of Joseph Campbell, the famous mythologist and folklorist,
yep,
who traveled the world and, you know, created the idea of the hero's journey, or discovered it or invented it or whatever.
Mystical literature from all over the world has accounts of visitations from magical creatures, angels, gods, what have you. Moses talked to a burning bush. Jacob had angels coming down a ladder. So we have tales from our familiar culture and from many others of some kind of supernatural creatures that interact and interfere, that represent some powers beyond our understanding.
And he was, I looked him up, there was a Los Angeles Times story about him. Well, it was about Joseph Campbell in 1993, and it introduces this guy, Jonathan Young, who Campbell found, and he became like his young protege. And then when Campbell died, his widow said Young could be the guy to curate the collection. And Young has this interesting quote in here in this article that I think is sort of relevant to what we've been talking about. He had explained that the great scriptures of the world's religions could be understood as metaphors for psychological change. It was a major turning point for me. And so then you remember, yeah, Campbell's whole thing was like, all of these stories, all these religions tell are just ways of understanding, like, you know, sociological or psychological realities around them.
Human experience.
Yeah. And so here's this guy who's showing up on this show in which they're inverting that whole thing and saying, no, no, all this stuff is literal. All this stuff is actually, it's super literal. It's not even, you know, the realm of heaven or whatever. It's actual aliens in vehicles, whether they be submarines or space vehicles or whatever. And I thought, what a weird way to have your whole life's message kind of reinterpreted for an audience.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you know, that's what they're doing with the Bible. So, of course, they're doing it with Joseph Campbell. It's what we do. It's what we do best, I think. It's just take information and make it however we need to make it to make sense to us.
There you go.
Daisy, thank you so much. This was very fun.
Thanks for having me. It was a great time.
Daisy, where can people find you and what do you do?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Where can people find you?
People can find me on the general main podcasting feed every Thursday, Strange and Unexplained. And they can find my other two podcasts, Dear Daisy and Shut the Fuck Up, Nick Lachey, both on Grab Bag Collab. You can also get Strange and Unexplained early and ad-free on Grab Bag Collab. And Shut the Fuck Up is now being offered on the main feed.
Amazing.
So there you go.
All right. Thank you, Daisy.
All right. Thank you for joining us for More Like Ancient Aliens and our discussion of strange abductions. We'll see you next week.
See you. More Like Ancient Aliens is produced by Heather Eagle Ears Wilson, and our theme song is by Nathan Reedy.
Next time, did aliens direct the work of Nazi-turned-NASA scientist and father of the space program, Wernher von Braun? Is there a humanoid robot head lying randomly on the surface of the moon? Is there a private cabal of elites that has treaties with several alien species? We're talking about NASA's secret agenda. That's Season 10, Episode 2. See you next week.